CSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Felix Leit of CBS News in Moscow. The events are dramatic. The movement by diplomats from all of the major NATO powers and the Russian Federation are hour to hour changing direction and possibilities. The crisis is at hand. Ukraine, will the Russian forces impose their will on the Ukrainian people? Will there be a resolution at NATO in Brussels, at the OSCE in Vienna, in Moscow, conversations between the foreign ministry and the U.S. State Department? Right now, Felix, working with the Moscow Times, is reporting what little we know. It's a moving story. Felix, my first concern is how the Russian people are being informed of these fast-breaking events. The Russian media on television is official enough. It's not absolutely the straight on the Kremlin, but it's very close. So what is the present understanding of the crisis in Ukraine, the demands by the Russian Federation, the so far non-response to those demands by NATO? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, so, you know, I think in Russia, the mood is very much of, I think, that, you know, this is a story that's gone on for quite some time. And people are, I think, you know, factoring into their calculations, factoring into their daily life that, you know, a war is possible. You know, a conflict, an escalation is very much possible. You know, we've very much heard the same story out of the Kremlin for quite some time now. And we do sort of, we see very much these sort of repetitions, you know, of rhetoric, you know, Lavrov saying that, you know, the Russian sort of patience has run out, or, you know, Putin making his demands. So, you know, I think the idea that, you know, we're living in a period of extraordinary tensions is very normalized and is very, very sort of common in Moscow. And yet at the same time, I think, you know, I feel a little bit like a broken record for saying this, because we've talked about it so often with you. You know, there is no popular clamor for war. There's a sort of, or if anything, like a sort of horror of war. There's no demand. There's no desire for a sort of a fully fledged onslaught on Ukraine. You know, it bears repeating, I think, that sort of 8 years into a military confrontation with Ukraine, most Russians retain sort of very, 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 you know, warm feelings towards, you know, the Ukrainian nation, if not the Ukrainian government. And so I think, you know, a war as such is a very hard sell. You know, we also, you know, we can look on state media. You know, state media is very much the Kremlin's outrider. They take their prompts, you know, from what the Kremlin wants them to talk about. And to be quite frank, we don't see any kind of coherent, you know, sort of concerted information offensive, if you will, against Ukraine. There's no attempt to sort of manufacture consent for war as we might expect. Certainly that's what happened in 2014, where sort of state TV did take a very, very firm line on Ukraine. This time it does seem rather more ambiguous. So it's a mixed picture, quite frankly. You know, it's a little bit of a bifurcated picture. On the one hand, we get this sort of grim rhetoric from officials, from the Kremlin. And on the other hand, we have a popular mood that just really isn't sort of in tune with that. So it really remains to be seen what will happen, quite frankly.
Two facts, not about what will happen, what has happened. One is that the Russian markets have been selling off these last days, anxiety. Yeah. The other is there are drills ongoing in Belarus, military drills. This is in coordination with the defense ministry in Belarus. I don't use those to predict anything, but the Russian people are responding by thinking and talking about the defense of Russia, especially when it comes to Russian assets. This sell-off of the market has to be alarming to everyone, Felix.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this was sort of a little bit of a delayed reaction on the part of the markets, you know. You know, like many observers, like many analysts, like many journalists, brokers didn't really want to believe that there would be a war. But, you know, we've been getting the same sort of message for such a long time now, that sort of, you know, Russia makes its demands, the West is unable or unwilling to meet them. And so, you know, war drifts, you know, that bit closer. And I think, you know, what we saw with this sort of these really stark days of losses of the Russian stock market was sort of the financial class really sort of coming into line with what has become the conventional wisdom politically. You know, I don't think it's a done deal. I don't think that, you know, a war is sort of baked in at this point. I think, you know, certainly I think it would be a bit of a drag for the Kremlin, because, you know, they don't want to sort of do something that the Russian people as opposed to, but I think, you know, certainly these kind of moves are very much, you know, various aspects of life really falling into line with what the underlying political realities are right now. So,
there are reports of videos of tearful farewells by Russian military to their families at train stations. Do you confirm those, and what do they refer to? Is it just artfulness that is going up on the video?
Well, we have seen, you know, sort of, you know, we have seen sort of families being sort of, you know, bidding their farewells as sort of troops are moved from their bases. But, you know, this is a fairly long story. You know, we've got, what, 175,000 Russian troops on the Ukrainian border right now. You know, there is a major sort of unusual sort of deployment that's going on. These are troops often, I think the troops to which we're referring now are primarily based in Siberia and the Far East. So this is quite a substantial redeployment. I think as well, you know, what we've had announced quite recently are these military exercises in Belarus. Now, Russia undertaking joint military exercises with Belarus is actually not that uncommon. It does happen relatively regularly. That being said, you know, given the circumstances of the standoff with Ukraine, and also, of course, given the circumstances that sort of Belarus, which for a very long time was almost a bridge between Russia and Ukraine, has in the last sort of year and a half moved very, very, very strongly in Russia's direction, does, you know, give us some sort of grounds to sort of read a little bit more into that. But I, you know, the signs, you know, as I've said before, the signs from officialdom, the military signs, are very, very concerning. We will just have to see how much events sort of continue to move in this direction.
There are other dramas. Let's go to Kazakhstan. Your Moscow Times is reporting, and the news is supporting, that the CSTO troops that were deployed to Kazakhstan during the turmoil of these last days have now left Kazakhstan. At the same time, we have the former leader of Kazakhstan, Mr. Nazarbayev, making a statement on video, on television, that he has stepped aside, or that full power is in the hands of Tokayev. Is this a big story? Because that's the Russian frontier just as much as Ukraine is.
It is, you know, it is and it isn't, quite frankly. You know, Kazakhstan is not a sort of a geopolitical playground, a geopolitical battleground in the same way that Ukraine is. And it doesn't have the same sort of hold on the Russian imagination. That being said, I think, you know, this, the fact that the outcome of the events, the unrest in Kazakhstan, does quite clearly seem to have been a decisive move in favor of Tokayev, who's the incumbent president, who, you know, for many years since the beginning of his presidency in 2019 was seen very much as a puppet and a placeholder of Nazarbayev. He seems to have assumed essentially full power, and the country is really being de-Nazarbayevified. You know, Nazarbayev's relatives, who are very, very wealthy, are losing their, having their businesses confiscated. Nazarbayev gave a speech which many, many actually compared to a sort of a hostage video, if anything. You know, this, I think, you know, the movement and the erosion of position of a leader and of a politician who had, you know, been in power in one way or another in Kazakhstan since the late 80s, you know, couldn't really fail not, it couldn't really fail to sort of elicit a great deal of interest in Russia. You know, this is, you know, a part of the world where presidents come to power and they very rarely leave. What we've seen in Kazakhstan is that, you know, a leader who appeared eternal has really lost everything. And I think that, that it very really speaks to, certainly to sort of anti-Putin Russians. And it's a story that I think has a lot of resonance here.
One other large story that will stay with us, whether or not Ukraine is resolved immediately, is Alexei Navalny publishing in Time, a voice from behind the gulag, quite extraordinary, saying that the urging the West not to fall into Putin's elementary traps. How do you interpret that, Felix?
Well, you know, Navalny is he's sort of, I think he's sort of keen for he's very keen for sort of the West to take certain actions against Moscow, but he's, I think he'd be very sort of, he's very careful of, very cautious of the idea that sort of Russia should, the West should be, should drift into a war. You know, he is always very keen that the West should reserve its sort of military measures, its military preparations, you know, for Putin and for the Russian elite rather than the Russian people. So one suspects that Navalny is talking about this, but you know, Navalny is, you know, he's an interesting guy. You know, he's obviously his influence in Russia is very limited now, and you know, it's hard to know how sort of his demographic, his group of sort of liberal opposition Russians will really respond to this sort of this latest crisis on the border.
Yes, and writing in Time magazine is not guaranteed to make him a warm figure in the Kremlin.
No,
I understand that, but they're also pursuing two of his major lieutenants, two of his counsels who have left Russia. Is there, just in these final 30 seconds, is there an exit from Russia of all of the former liberal democratic voices? Are they leaving the country, making note when they leave?
They are indeed. You know, I personally know a number of sort of Navalny staffers, and you know, if they have not left by now, they are making, you know, very serious preparations to leave. You know, and this most recent announcement that sort of two of Navalny's closest erstwhile staffers are now you know, legally terrorists or considered terrorists in Russia, you know, is a very clear signal, I think, to the ones who are left to get out of the country very quickly.
Felix Leit, CBS News, Moscow Times. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.